What we have tonight is case 42 of 48 cases of these scenarios that practitioners of later time, posterity, this text is compiling in the 13th century. So meditate on these cases. Every one of these single stories have some kind of conflict, some kind of irresolvable, unpenetrable thing. Yeah. So let's get to the case. This one, 42.
The girl comes out of samadhi. Samadhi means kind of oneness or unified state of deep meditative absorption. How many of you do not know the word samadhi? Samadhi is a Romanized Sanskrit term. That's the title. Here's a case, the compiler's comment in his poetic verse. And then I'll provide my comment. These cases are used as springboards to relate it to our own lives. In ancient times, and by the way, I didn't have time to correct the translation. This is the only case I didn't do that. I didn't have time before the meeting, but we'll just read this translation. In ancient times, Manjushri was present where all the enlightened ones were assembled with the world-honored one, the Buddha. When the time came that all the enlightened ones, the Buddhas, were returning to their own places, there was a girl left behind sitting in samadhi near Buddha. Manjushri then asked the Buddha, "How is it that a girl may sit close to the Buddha, but I may not?" The Buddha told Manjushri, "Just arouse that girl, bring that girl out of samadhi, and ask her yourself." Manjushri circled three times around the girl and snapped his fingers. Then he took her up in the heavens of sublime form and meditative bliss, Brahma's heaven. Manjushri used up all of his spiritual powers without being able to bring her out of samadhi. The world-honored one said, "Even hundreds of thousands of Manjushris could not bring that girl out of her samadhi. But if you go down past 1,200 million worlds, there is a bodhisattva called Ignorance who can bring this girl out of samadhi." At that instant, Bodhisattva Ignorance welled up from the ground and bowed in homage to the World Honored One. The World Honored One directed Ignorance so that he went over to the girl, snapped his finger once. In that instant, the girl came out of her samadhi. That's the case. "Woman," the compiler said, "the old man Shakyamuni clumsily staged this play. It was not to convey something trivial. But tell me, Manjushri was the teacher of seven Buddhas. Why couldn't he bring the girl out of samadhi?" Ignorance was only a bodhisattva in the first stage. Why then could he bring her out of it? If you can see on an intimate level here, then the frantic haste of karmic discriminating consciousness is the great samadhi of the dragon kings, the Nagas, the keepers of wisdom. Here is his verse. Bringing one in or bringing one out or not, she and you are on your own. It's probably a bad translation here. Spiritual heads and demon faces meet defeat in the flowing wind. Meet your defeat in the flowing wind. Let me put this in a language that we can relate to. Basically, Manjushri, in all the Mahayana scriptures, is featured as the greatest bodhisattvas, one of the greatest bodhisattvas in the whole Buddhist tradition. He is the embodiment of wisdom, of prajna, awakening. He has forsook his own Buddhahood in order to stay behind, to train, to teach other practitioners, highly advanced practitioners. And he has put seven Buddhas through the... He has processed seven Buddhas, you know, to great awakening. He is still a great bodhisattva. There are 52 stages of bodhisattvahood. The 53rd is Buddhahood. This is according to the Chinese doctrinal system. So Bodhisattva Manjushri would be on the 52nd. This would be Den Jue Pusa, which means universal awakening Bodhisattva, Mahasattva. Bodhi means awakening, Sattva means person, Bodhisattva, awakened being. Maha means great, Sattva means person. He's a Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Manjushri. So here's a person who has trained seven Buddhas. He knows all the samadhis, all the meditative trance, all the meditative absorption. He knows all the in-depth wisdom of the Buddhas. In fact, the Bodhisattva at that stage of universal awakening can actually manifest as a Buddha in other world systems to teach sentient beings. They have everything they need to appear as a Buddha. It's just the one slight stench of awakening left that needs to be removed. But it's a fully embodiment of wisdom. In fact, the Chan tradition, Zen tradition, in the meditation halls, we usually don't have the Buddha statue there, maybe in the back. What we have is Manjushri. He's usually embodied as holding a sword on the right hand, the left hand, holding a lotus. On the lotus petal, there sits transcendent wisdom scripture, prajnaparamita. Transcendent wisdom, scripture of transcendent wisdom. That sword symbolizes wisdom that cuts away all ignorance. So Manjushri is placed square and center in the meditation hall within the Chan tradition. The Buddha hall, of course, that's the Buddha's, but the meditation hall in which practitioners train, they meditate, like the retreat.
retreats that we have just ended, the meditation hall, traditional hall would feature Manchusri. So very important. This case, unlike others, is meant for people who are just doctrinally very informed and very well aware of the role, the important role that Manjusri plays in the whole of the Buddhist tradition. The more knowledgeable you are of Manjusri, the better this case will work for you. So he is this great practitioner, teacher. Then you have the first stage bodhisattva, whose name is Wu Ming, fundamental ignorance. So you have 52 stages. It's at the first stage. The case is Manjusri cannot bring this girl out of samadhi, out of her meditative trance. But that little tiny, maybe not so tiny, but you know, this bodhisattva of the first stage are able to bring this person out. The bodhisattva of the first stage is already enlightened. Okay? They start counting the stages after a person is enlightened. That's the Mahayana. So, the first 10. The first stage of the first 10 is called great faith. Stage of conviction, faith. What does that mean? It means you have personally tasted the Dharma. No one can fool you anymore. Someone try to fool you, you know, water tastes like this, tastes like that, but if you take it a sip, no one can fool you. You know what water tastes like. But bodhisattva at the lower stages, they only taste a little bit. They taste it all right, but just a little bit, just one sip. So they have to drink again and again and again and again. This means they have to reawaken again and again and again and again. So their conviction is replete. Then they move on to the 11th stage, right? Stage of non-abiding. So it's laid out, you can Google it if you want. 52 stages. When we have the book out, the book version we upload in. So basically, not a beginner practitioner, but compared to Manjusri, he could bring her out of samadhi. The context of this scenario, it's not completely made up, unlike the other gongans, which are just daily life situations. This gongan is set in context of scripture, the Buddha's time. It comes from one scripture, one Mahayana text, in which all the Buddhas at one time was gathered together, and Manjusri was not allowed to be present. He was sent to be to at this other mountaintop. And when the congregation of the Buddhas were over, he could come. So that's why Manjusri is kind of ticked off a little bit. Okay? Do you understand the context now? So he goes over there, okay, all the Buddhas, they have convened, they have kind of left to their own respective places, and then he finds a girl there, close to his teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Well, actually, Shakyamuni Buddha was one of his students in previous lifetime, ex-student, but now a Buddha. So, and then he said, World Honored One, why is it that I am not allowed to be in the present, but this girl is here? You see? And Shakyamuni Buddha said, oh, I don't know. Call her out of her meditative absorption. And ask her. So Manjusri is there, doing all his gadget thing, bring her up to the heaven of 33 heaven, doing his spiel. And she just wouldn't come out of samadhi. She had deep, deep meditative absorption. Manjushri is able to call out anyone, everyone. He taught in previous lifetimes Shakyamuni how to enter into samadhi. This is a big honcho in the Buddhist tradition. Hence comes the conflict. Manjushri unable to bring her out. A puny bodhisattva at the first stage. One snap of finger, she comes out. See? So the question, the heart of this Gong'an is this. Why is a Manjushri unable to bring her out of her meditative absorption? And a bodhisattva at the lowest level able to do that. That's the conflict. Now, if you start to think about logically, well, maybe it's lucky, or maybe they know each other, then that's the discriminating mind, again, churning, coming out with reason, logic. You want to bring yourself to a place in which all of these are dropped away. Completely unfathomable, completely impenetrable, leaving you with a sense of just bare, naked wonderment. Just, what is it? Until that, the flame of this sense of wonderment consumes every one of your discriminating thoughts, your judgment, your past experiences, all of your fabrications based on your knowledge, your experience, what you have read from the past. Until all of these are consumed, leaving you with this not knowing yet wanting to know. That's the point. So I'm not going to go to the direction of, oh, let me tell you why, you know, this and that. Now there are, of course, other embedded in this Gong'an, this public case of awakening, other sub questions. For example, Manjushri is a teacher of seven Buddhas. Why can't he be present at the assembly of the enlightened ones? Why is he asked to go elsewhere? Why is it that when he comes, all the Buddhas decide, oh, Manjushri, let's take off? That's essentially what happens. Huh? Manjushri is here. Was what we've been talking about. Perhaps. What? Why? Is there something that he lack? Is there something that he don't know? Why is it that the girl are able to enter into a meditative trance that even the greatest of teachers are unable to bring him out? But the meager bodhisattva can. And most of all, why is she there? Why isn't Manjushri allowed to be there? Yet the girl can. During the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, we're talking about a patriarchal society. Women are placed low. Culturally, it's just like that. Even now in India. Yes?
Yeah.
When men from the Brahmin class, even though caste system is already done away with by the British people, there are still remnants. I have a student who tells me he lives on, there are certain streets in India and temples exclusively for the Brahmin caste. Other people in castes are not allowed to go there. Let alone women? No. How? But Manjushri. So that India, particular time, space, still feeling the remnants now with kind of modern time,
still has that remnant. Now, at that time, 2,500 years ago, you can pretty much bet. So there, hence, another conflict embedded in this Gohan. So this Gohan is a little bit complex than the other ones. Why is it that girls allowed to, or women's allowed to be present among all the Buddhas, and the teacher of Buddhas can't be there? Now here is Wu-men's, Chan Master Wu-men's hint, his prose comment. Says, Shakyamuni, the old man, clumsily stage up some kind of play, set up a trap for Manjushri. Not only Manjushri, but all of you, each and every one of you, now, in this moment. Yeah, now that you explained it, why couldn't Manjushri be present and that woman can be present? Why is it that a great Bodhisattva cannot bring a girl out of meditative absorption and a Bodhisattva of the first level can? Okay. Staging up a play. The next line is, it's not for something trivial, it's not just a play. You must bring yourself to this point, this juncture, in which you don't know. Yet you want to know. Why is that? Because even in your daily life, all of you have experienced this. When you interact with people, when you interact with a scenario, things you have to accomplish, you go at it with a lot of preparation, reading up on knowledge, this and that, you go there and it doesn't turn out the way you think. How many of you have experienced that? You go there like over-prepared. How many of you have experienced this? Most of you are not that young. I remember when I was, I'm in my 40s. I remember when I was in high school. There's no such thing as cell phone. Personal laptop? Just think about it. iPad, iPhone, even, I don't know what generation we're at, but maybe 7 years ago, there's no such thing. Right? It was a comeback against Microsoft, basically. But now in the world, how many people have iPads, iPhones, and smartphones, and Androids? Right? Now, how many of you have experienced this? If you have children, if you have young people, you know, you may not be able to function. You give it to an 8-year-old. Oh, she'll teach you how to download the apps and do this and do that. She's more skilled than you. How many of you have experienced this? Raise your hand. This case is not about young or old, skilled, unskilled. But we can get some inkling of, in our daily life, when we have accomplished something, stumbled upon it, and actually finish the task that needs to be done, whatever that needs to be done. It is most likely not through all of your thinking and discrimination, and preparation, and so on. Sometimes the answer is readily available. And the more we try to do certain things, come up with solutions, whatever we come up with feels contrived. overanalyze.
So we can get an inkling of what this is talking about. What this case is talking about. Just imagine that in your own life. Multiply that by the thousands. Whatever we try to do, try to come out with solutions through our thinking mind, through our fabrication, through our constructs. You can be very witty about it. Ultimately, it will not resolve the problem. When we try to advise someone, try to figure out a solution to our own problem. When we let go, then sometimes solutions manifest in their own accord. It's like an artist faced with a canvas, a blank canvas. Sure, there are certain kind of art you can just busy the canvas with all kinds of stuff, thinking, very smart kind of abstract art. That's not the one I'm talking about. I'm talking about sitting in front of the canvas, you know, that moment before the first stroke, before the first brush goes down. Artists can sit in front of a blank canvas for a long time. And when their ideas, notions drop away, then inspiration comes. Have you gotten that? Have you? Have a sense of that? Or sometimes you mull over some questions, you keep it in the back of your mind. You try to think about this, think about that, it doesn't really work, but one day you're doing something completely different. Gardening or doing something, you go see a play, you got an answer. Mm-hmm. Kind of like that, except multiply that.
By a thousand.
So, woman's comment, why is it Manjushri, the teacher of seven Buddhas, is able to do this, but a meager bodhisattva at the first stage are able to bring the guru on samadhi? If you can be on an intimate level, this means if you can bring yourself to such intimacy in which you are in that position, in your life, not necessarily this case, but in your life, be in the moment, in which you face some task that needs some resolution. Completely be in the moment in which all of your scattered, discriminating judgments, experiences, past knowledge, book knowledge, hearsay, whatever, all these suddenly drop away. Then woman says, then the frantic haste of karmic discriminating consciousness is the great samadhi of the Nagas, the dragon kings. There's one kind of practitioners in Zen or in Chan or in Buddhism in general. They have a large stick of measurement, ruler. They measure themselves by that ruler. They also measure other people with that ruler. They can. Such practitioners are people that we say, these practitioners can wallow and enjoy, savor each moment in the realm of the Buddhas. Realm of the Buddhas. Delight themselves in it. But they cannot enter the realm of Mara. Mara. The devil.
Okay.
Trying to put it simply. What? Thereby, far, far, far away from awakening. The meaning of that is, usually practitioners, when they take up a practice, they become spiritually uplifted, and they make that their spirituality into a thing, right? Congealed. And now that's the thing that they love. They give, they feed off of it. They treasure it. Anything else is not it. They frown upon, try to escape from. Can't handle it. So they have to get their dose every day or on a weekly basis to kind of be blissed out. Or they compartmentalize, divide their life into this and that. Good and bad. Beneficial, unbeneficial. It's not that there aren't these divisions, but if we are caught by them, then that would further the culprit that rule our lives. And the culprit is our self-referential, discriminating mind. And they start to take their ruler, not to measure up other people. A lot of practitioners are like this. The harder they practice, the more everyone else look like beasts. Animals. You know. Yeah, there's a Chinese expression. They describing that. The more harder they practice, the more they see everyone else is having a horse head, ox head, horns coming out of their forehead. For these people, they will not be able to enter the realm of Mara. Good and bad. Samadhi. No samadhi. Advanced level. Beginner level. All of these things become part of spiritual, I don't know, signposts? That they can kind of gauge themselves. Where am I at now? You know, I've been practicing for a decade or two. You know, I should be able to do this, that, and that. And you're just a beginner. Here's how you should be practicing. If you have that still working with you, very far away from your true nature. That is what we call kind of spiritual materialism, in which something originally good, spiritual path, practice, processed, filtered by self-reference, turns to garbage. Just another layer of garbage. Prior to coming to spiritual practice, a person may be into all kinds of, I don't know, iPad, iPhone, G4, whatever. And after they become spiritual, now they're into samadhis, and, you know, compassion. You're not compassionate. Look how compassionate I am. I donate to this and that. I donate so much to this organization, that organization. It becomes another thing that's kind of soiled by self-grasping. You see? It's like a nice, originally nice bowl of congee. Then you put rat turds in it. And it's kind of not edible anymore. Now you may look at all of you frowns, oh, disgusting. Each and every one of you, every day, is doing this. Putting rat turd in stuff. Now I may be a little harsh. Maybe a little harsh, like, oh, I'm not doing that. From the perspective of your true nature, in which each and every one of you is originally free. Originally make it sound like sometime in the long distant past, but even in this moment, you're free. in this moment. Soon as you try to introduce your experience, your knowledge, your past learnings, words and language into processing this moment, you're as far away as heaven as. Now, is knowledge or intellect important? Very important, but most people are prisoners of these constructs. For example, you know, someone may say something to you, call your name, immediately you get upset. But in reality, it's just that person's, what's going on that person's head. That person project on you. Myself, I don't like that shirt. Why do you always wear a gray shirt? Zev said, I'm sorry, I like gray. maybe next week Zev won't wear gray anymore. Right? But that's, other people project stuff, say stuff, even about you, even about the name. I'm calling Zev. It's my head. It's in me. Nothing to do with you. Wrongly accuse you, blame you. Very easily, you know, we get tangled up. You call me? You call me? Why, how dare you do this? These words and language. See how much we're affected? Our interpersonal relationship. I have family members who have like hold grudges for like decades, because of some small insignificant thing. Some of you have family members. Know this? Right? Raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about. That's a good analogy, because a lot more hands now. Right? We know this. That rigidity, attachment to this particular view of the person, that's completely yours. Because another person has a completely different view of that person. Is there objective reality? Ask yourself, is there? Now, there's some consensus in the objective world, like person that keeps killing someone else or robbing someone else, you put them in jail. It's consensus. It's objective criteria, law, and so on. What are those things? Those objective rules, law, or just consensus, a bunch of subjective opinions. So what is subjective, objective? It's not too clear-cut. What is objective, sometimes it's just a group of subjective views. They agree, and it becomes the objective criteria. People should eat with forks and knives as opposed to chopsticks and hands. You go to another context. They all eat with hands, particular hand, right as opposed to left, perhaps, right? Or different policies and rules from the government. It changes all the time. Governors can change from Democrat to Republican and back from Republican to Democrat. It changes. But if we hold on to them as like the criteria for the world, then one more unnecessary attachment. What is necessary is the benefit of all people. But if the benefit of all people now becomes your object of attachment, like, hey, look at those people, they're not benefiting all, then it's like the kanji. Put it in there. Benefiting, oh, how can that be bad? Compassion, how can that be bad? Very good, very delicious. But then we can just ruin it. You see? So I'm not talking about necessarily that we don't need rules, just anarchy or anything like that. Not not talking about that. But within our hearts, in this moment, if you look inside, how fast, how instantaneous we filter everything around the sense of self. What is good for me? What is not? What is beneficial? What is not? What is success? What is failure? What is worthy? What is not worthy? This saturates every aspect of our life. When we look at someone else, drive a certain car, and then we look at our car, like my car, 1995, Honda Civic, 210,000 miles, still running strong. But you know, like all these things, we have feelings associated with these ideas, constructs. Or don't have this, we need to get that. We lack that, and we need to get this. Every moment. But trust that in each moment, you're free. These constructs of Mara and Buddha, good and bad, success and failure, roam free. That is your playground. And you can be free. If you aren't free, then you need practice. If you can be free, you don't need practice. You don't need to put your legs in a pretzel shape. Every day. If you can be free. What's the measurements? Hey, why don't you just go in front of the public and give a talk on something without preparation? If you start to get nervous, that's an indicator you're not free. Oh, I'm embarrassed. Someone may have a view about me. I may screw up or I may... What is that? Self-attachment. Very easy. Or you go to Starbucks every day. You get your coffee, and then someone just get the wrong coffee that you order. So, you know me. Why'd you get the... Self-attachment right there. Mm-hmm. Not free. You're bound by a meager cup of coffee. Right? So this saturates every aspect of our lives. For that reason, woman says, if you can be intimate with this moment and not be caught by why is she there and I'm not allowed to be there, or why can't I pull this girl out of samadhi and then that first grader bodhisattva can, if you're not caught by that, then the discriminating consciousness, karmic consciousness, is the great samadhi, the great liberation. Samadhi here means liberation of all the great practitioners. This means you will be able to enter the realm of the Buddhas and also the realm of Maras. You get it? People that embarrass you, people that you don't necessarily associate with, you'll be able to connect. Because you have no luggage, baggage. Should be able to. Normally you may listen to classical music, very nice. And then I throw you in the rap dancing club. See how you fare. Right? Everyone's like... See if you're free. You can be free. One of my deepest experiences when I left the monastery, some of you may know this, have heard me, in between grad school, worked as a doorman. Right? People used to do 3 prostrations. Now I ask people, do you have your ID? Check your ID. Everyone's an MBA. Young people look down on me. Never seen a Chinese person working at a door, you know, walking by. At first, I can only enter the realm of the Buddhas. I can't enter the realm of Mara. Right? Not at ease. Humiliation. It's one thing when my teacher used to humiliate me, test me. It's my teacher. It's teaching. It's a teaching. You know, it's not a real life situation. It's a teaching. But when real life situations, real people take advantage of you, make fun of you, humiliate you. It's free lessons. Free. Absolutely free. And the whole world is all opened up. That's the teaching. And all day long I just heard my colleagues, other door people, they're like, oh man, what's going on, man? What are you doing today, man? Yeah. Not doing good. I couldn't get a job. Right? Who wants to hire a master's degree student in religion? It's not like business, you know. It's religion, what? I had to pay rent right away. Right away. Couldn't get a job. Just grab any job I could. You know, wallowing in my vexations. Left the monastery. Left the shelter environment. Then, one day, just standing there. Oh, by the way, you're not allowed to sit down. You have to stand your shift. Hours and hours. See your ID. Mine is at ease. Calm. Then one of my friends overheard him say, it's all good, man, it's all good. The barrier. And I realized, it's all good. It is all good. Right, so Mara, Buddha, success, failure. You never know. And if we judge other people by that criteria, treat you far and further away. But the worst judgment is how we judge ourselves. This, I don't have that degree, I don't have this, I'm not good at this, or I'm very good, like falsely, like no substance, kind of falsely boosting oneself. That's just as bad as falsely and low self-esteem, just as bad. In both cases, self-attachment is very strong. You don't think that people that are humble, oh, that self-attachment is actually very low. No, very strong. So both cases, both extremes, and everything in between, how we judge ourselves, and we use that ruler on other people. That's the practical dimension of this goal. The real crust of this goal, thrust of this goal, is to really question that. To really question the values that we place on this moment that is intrinsically free, and how we compartmentalize things, divide things, separate things. For that reason, the poetic verse, able to bring out or not, she and you are your own. Spirit head, demon face, or in Guagu's term, horse head, right? Or kind of horn, ox head, human body versus a beautiful saint. Meet your defeat. Where? The natural flowing wind. Does the wind divide? Does the space divide? We can compartmentalize the space into north wall, south wall, east and west. We can have furniture in this room. We can have partitions in this room. Does spaciousness itself have a problem when you divide it up? No. We don't want dividing up. From the perspective of space, intrinsic freedom, here and now. Do you understand? And when you discover yourself bound by this and that, learn to see through that wall. It may be useful not to just ignore the wall, or just deny the existence of wall. See its usefulness. Everything is, the meaning of things are in its use. If you're sick, you take medicine. If you're not sick, what's the use of medicine? Right? Put back on the shelf. You may not use it. Someone else will. You use it for someone else. If you are already healed from this flu, the cold, the sick, and you keep on carrying in your pocket, right, in case I get sick again, it's kind of like useless. And then they expire, and you throw it out anyway. There are some people that have big pocketbooks. They got everything in there. They got, you know, Tylenol and Advil. And they got cold medicine. They got this, they got that, they got that. They got scissors, they got clippers, they got glasses, they got magnifying glasses. They got all kinds of stuff. Just carrying a big bag. Not so useful. Unless they're great bodhisattvas. Anyone with any possible need, they have it in their pocketbook. They can hand it out. But if we are bound by them, all these things, then it's best to examine within yourself. Break down the wall. See through the wall. Know the function. Does that make sense? If you want to use this gong'an as your meditation method, then you can, first of all, you get my permission. But the crust of this is success, failure. Why can't Manjushri successfully bring this girl out of samadhi? Is it a meager bodhisattva can do it? Cannot. Success, failure. Even 1,000 Manjushris will fail at bringing this girl out of samadhi. But related to our own lives, those are good two words. Success and failure. That's useful, right? Mm-hmm. How many of you judge your own accomplishments through success and failure? Success and failure. The goal. Goal oriented. Success and failure. Are you useful? Mm-hmm. This is, if you want to use this, it's not a matter of coming up with more logical reasoning. Why things are successful, why things are failure, and change it a little bit. The next time you can be really successful. It's not the point. Is to question these barriers themselves. The barriers that, in this case, Shakyamuni Buddha displayed, the trap that he displayed. And in our lives, are there a lot of traps? A lot of displays, right? Especially board meetings and, you know, all kinds of stuff, meeting with different people. A lot of barriers. A lot of barriers. Everywhere we turn, there's a potential obstruction. So questioning those, not to deny them, they have a function in the world. But in yourself, if you find the yourself is obstructed, then you have to be free. Once you're free, you'll be able to utilize all these occasions. No longer are they obstructions, but they are opportunities. Opportunities. Obstruction versus opportunities. Easy to remember. Right? Both starts with O. And when you overcome them, you will exclaim, oh. You will get to the heart of the O's. Any questions? Okay. Have a good night.